All right. Hi, everybody. And I think we're on program number 8. I'm managing to do this somehow on the same day, and hopefully I'll be able to carry through properly. We talked about the dual life of the accepted disciple, and hierarchy these days has an extremely dual life, reaching towards Shambhala and yet simultaneously reaching towards humanity and seeking its welfare. We go on to the idea outgoing and withdrawing, serving in the world and living the life of reflection. Maybe the sign Libra coming into power in the planetary horoscope will help us keep this kind of balance. It's related to the noble middle path, and it's not one or the other, especially at this time when both are needed, because in the inner reflection, it gives the kind of energy and spiritual stimulation which one must carry outward. And then from the feedback in carrying the spiritual work outward, we learn again how to approach inwardly and seek correction and seek more of what is needed. The next little section here is on the solar plexus as a great clearinghouse before the second initiation. I guess many, many energies are passing through it and being redirected towards the heart, really. As we know, initiation 1, sacral center of the throat, initiation 2, solar plexus to heart. And yet there's plenty of the throat stimulation at this second initiation. The solar plexus center is the great clearinghouse for all energies below the diaphragm. They have to be directed through it and elevated. This refers to the three major centers and the minor centers, which are enumerated, what is it, on page 72 of what book? Esoteric Healing. Let's take a look at Esoteric Healing. Did it say page 171? Something like that. Okay. So, enumerated solar plexus, and it seems to say page 171. And I suppose this is an important diagram here. The book, which has a lot of references in connection with the centers, is Esoteric Healing, and I can see that it really is studied carefully and needs to be studied carefully. Maybe that's one of the ones that we can take up as we go along. But this is, I think I was on the wrong page there, page 72. And let's see if, yes, centers are enumerated here. Many centers. In front of the ears, to where the jawbone is connected. Two of them in the two breasts. There's one where the breastbone meets, close to the thyroid gland, thus forming a triangle of force. Two in the palms of the hand. Two in the soles of the feet, just behind the eyes. Two connected with the gonads. There's also one close to the liver. So these are minor centers. There's one connected to the stomach. It is related, therefore, to the solar plexus, but is not identical with it. There are two connected with the spleen. These form one center in reality, but such a center is formed by the two being superimposed upon each other. So that's a piece of occult technical information. There are two, one at the back of each knee. And there's a powerful center which is closely connected with the vagus nerve. This is most potent and is regarded by some schools of occultism as a major center. It is not in the spine, but it is no great distance from the thymus gland. There is one which is close to the solar plexus and relates it to the center at the base of the spine, thus making a triangle of the sacral center of the solar plexus and the center at the base of the spine. Okay, well, there's lots here, and I suppose we would have to specialize somehow in order to understand these things in greater detail. It's quite impossible to cover the entire offering that Master DK has made. And he tells us so, you know, don't let your mind range over the entire planet. Choose something and work it through, carry it forward. Anyway, three major centers and the minor centers, which are enumerated on page 72. The minor centers are the relation of this center to the astral plane, solar plexus, to use a peculiar but most expressive word, is acute, especially at this time and on this planet, when the cosmic astral body of our planetary logos has not been mastered, and when our solar logos is polarized at this time in his cosmic astral body. It is the recipient of all emotional reactions and of desire impulses and energies. And because humanity is today becoming active in a group sense and is more inclusive than ever before in human history, the situation is one of acute and extreme difficulty. You know, we have heart energies moving us in one direction, solar plexus, and lower chakra energies moving us in another. Basically, the battle is between the second ray and the sixth ray, and so let's say the United States, that has those as its soul and personality ray, is going to be the scene of a very important battle between subdiaphragmatic Martian energies and super diaphragmatic Jupiterian and solar energies. So mankind, through the individual and also through the collective solar plexus, is being subjected to almost unendurable pressure. And I would say, you know, this, we might call this, no, that's not the right way to go. Okay. Unendurable pressure. Okay. So this is, I'm going to, yeah. So this is unendurable pressure. No. That's not it. Okay. Let's see if I can possibly make it work now. Sorry. All right. So this is prior to the elevation of these energies. See, humanity is becoming the world disciple. It is already the world disciple. It's certainly the world aspirant. And for this reason, the energies are being reorganized prior to elevation by such other tests of initiation. And as individuals, we have to be ready on this forcing process we call the path of initiation to endure pressures which otherwise we might not have to endure. But even humanity now as a whole is being forced through a narrow passage and at considerable speed. So we have to endure this solar plexus energy, but during the age of Aquarius and under Mercury and Venus, Saturn, Mercury, and Venus, there's going to be a reduction of the Martian energies and the warlike nature, and a period of brotherly love is on its way, not only in the last decanate of 720 years of Aquarius under Venus, but also love energies growing stronger during the Mercury decanate as well, ruled as it is by a planet which gives us much of harmony in the fourth ray. It is not my intention, says the Tibetan, to deal here with the processes of attracting the lower energies, you know, from sacral and solar plexus and other lower energies below the diaphragm, major, minor, and minute centers. The mode of centralizing them in the solar plexus and there transmuting them and refining them elevating our desires, where transference into the heart center becomes possible as our desires become more inclusive. We can elevate them to the heart center. And of course, as the energies are elevated and are transferred to the heart center, they become even more inclusive. Humanity is trying to learn something about the quality of love, and that is the quality of the soul of our planet, and it's the quality of the hierarchy, and the quality of the Christ, and his return will certainly teach us a lot about the energy of love. So much of this is connected with the training given to accepted disciples prior to the second initiation, and note that one can indeed become an accepted disciple before the second initiation. And this was the case with the majority of those in Master DK's groups and reorganized seed group. Right. So how much before? We don't know, but some of them were on the verge of the second degree, and others would have it ahead by a life or two or three, maybe. It would be too intricate a matter to discuss, as well as carrying with it certain peculiar dangers for those not ready for the process, as there would be too much contact with the Agni Surians of the astral plane. Agni Surians, I hope I'm giving that the right. Agni Surians, I think it's so, of the astral plane. And just too much emphasis upon the solar plexus and the chance of becoming glamored through that type of focus. There's a natural elevation that occurs when we try to focus in the heart center and the higher centers, and the lower energies are drawn up, and new visions are given towards which to aspire. And when we just really pump those lower centers, they can attract the old energies that we're attract and intensify the old energies with which we are trying to no longer be so connected. Okay. It is, however, one that under living effort does go forward almost automatically. So we live, we meditate, we study, we serve, and the elevation occurs. There are so many sort of direct approaches to stimulating the centers, and often as if they were in the physical body per se. And, you know, there are the dangers of overstimulation of that from which we are attempting to withdraw. Those dangers are considerable. The solar plexus is thus the most separative of all the centers. Interesting. Think of the separatism of Mars, which has in it the separative sixth ray. It has in it the orange separative fifth ray. Probably may have ultimately a first ray monad after the fifth ray submonadic ray, at least as I hypothesize it. And that ray can be very separative, and egotistical. It rules the personality, coming under the third aspect of divinity, Mars does. And the solar plexus is very much a center which controls the personality. So it's thus one of the most separative of all the centers. Okay, and there's more to it here. Except the Ajna center, in the case of the man on the left-hand path, and let's just say having made the wrong decision at the Ajna center. You know, this was interesting because Hitler had Libra rising, and Aleister Crowley, I think, had a prominent Libra too. Probably Hitler was much worse than Crowley, and the wrong decision was made. And there's a lot of glamorous lore around Hitler, but the combination, DK says, of the Ashton Center and Sacral Center is sometimes used by these demagogues and those who try to sway the masses according to the lower energies. Hitler certainly had that. So the two parts of the Ashton Center symbolize, in a way, the right and the left-hand path. And, of course, there's also the noble middle path. Anyway, this solar plexus center stands at the dividing point. It stands at the midway point between the throat and the heart centers above the diaphragm. Well, wait a second. Let's see about that. Is that so? Am I doing this correctly? The solar plexus center is thus the most separative of all centers, except for the Ajna center in the case of the man on the left-hand path, you know, following the second initiation often and making the wrong decision, because it stands at the midway point between the throat and the heart centers. Well, something stands there, but it doesn't seem, can it be that the Ajna center stands there? It's not the solar plexus for sure. And the heart centers above the diaphragm and the sacral and basic centers below. I just didn't read far enough. It stands at the midway point between the throat and the heart centers above the diaphragm and the sacral and basic. There it is. So that's clear. I just didn't read far enough. This is a consideration of major importance, and there's a division that can occur. You know, Mars is all about cutting things, dividing things. The sword, the spear, you know, that which rends and tears apart. So the separative personality which the solar plexus seems to rule is involved in this taking apart of that which should be unified. We need to ponder these things, but we certainly need to rise out of our solar plexus into Jupiter, Venus, and Neptune at the second degree. We need to have love characterize the astral body. We need to move towards the second ray and away from the divisiveness of the sixth ray, which must be obvious, and moving out of the age of Pisces with its present six-ray emphasis, this will be possible and very necessary. Okay, the next one is about, I leave these behind, knowing that I have not said even all, that certainly not all that can be said, and not even all that I know, and not even all that is necessary to say, but one must keep moving. Excuse me. Three aspects of the law of karma. Okay. You have, therefore, three aspects of the law of karma as it affects rebirth. The law of karmic liability governing life in the three worlds of human evolution, which is ended altogether at the fourth initiation, humanity's karma. Oh, come on. H-U. Sorry. Let's see what we can do. Humanity's karma is taken on, but there are higher types of karma, and we certainly realize that even the solar logos or the planetary logos is not released from these higher types of karma. The law of karma is strong on the star Sirius, the intermediate law of karma, and is governing very much the process in our solar system and on our planet, which has a peculiar relationship to Sirius, even though it's such a minor planet. So the law of karmic liability, and I might say, in a way, you know, coming very much under Saturn. So Saturn is a karmic planet, and Saturn is a dharmic planet. It represents many different things. And sometimes we're just not free to pursue our dharma until we work through the preventive karma that keeps us from entering the field where the dharma can be expressed. So liability is one thing, and we enter with liabilities and debts to be paid. And then there's the law of karmic necessity. This governs the life of the advanced disciple and initiate from the time of the second initiation until a certain initiation higher than the fourth. One wonders, is it the sixth, which is a choice and is again ruled by Saturn, is very strong there, as Libra is a hierarchical planet. Libra rules the great decision. And this is an initiation of the third ray, and Saturn is the major third ray planet. So you wonder if it's the sixth initiation he's talking about. Karmic necessity, it sounds of a planetary nature. It's that in which people are caught. Necessarily, it's a wider consideration. These initiations enable him to pass on the way, onto the way of the higher evolution. So, it is not about initiations beyond the sixth, because it is at the sixth that we do pass on the way of higher evolution. So, I have a feeling here that we're talking about the sixth initiation. There's certainly a connection between them, and he, you know, talks about mental polarization after the second degree, but in the context of the sixth degree. So, you know, the interesting numerical affinity. So, karmic necessity, when things are necessary, they come from a higher source, such as our planetary logos. When events are necessary, they come from a higher source, such as our planetary logos. So, the way of higher evolution, three aspects of the law of karma. We do have to remember that these karmic lords on Sirius are very high. There are Lipika lords that are dealing with issues we cannot comprehend. There are the four Maharajas that spread themselves out, as we are told, in our solar system, at the four corners, perhaps. There are very high karmic relations. Far beyond our the expiation of our human karma. And what else here in this law of karma and the law of karmic transformation? Well, that's interesting. A mysterious phrase governing the process undergone upon the higher way. Okay, so this has to do with a way of higher evolution and as traveling monads, something great happens to our abilities and our consciousness and so forth. Okay, so these fit the initiate processes. These processes, let's call them that, fit the initiate to pass off the cosmic physical plane altogether and to function, well, first, I suppose, on the cosmic astral plane. You've got to go through that first, right, before you reach the cosmic mental plane. It is concerned with the release of those like Sanat Kumara and his associates in the Council Chamber of Shambhala. Well, then it's got to be connected with our planetary logos directly, because Sanat Kumara is an emanated being from the planetary logos. But then aren't we all emanated beings, ultimately? Our true identity is something other than we imagine when we think of our sort of limited self. So karma, as we see, is rising very high. The first has to do with issues that take us maybe to the fourth initiation. Yes, and then to the sixth initiation, and then altogether off the cosmic physical plane and onto the path on which these exalted beings can be found. And shall we say, perhaps, that Sanat Kumara is on his way to the path of the solar logoi, and does that mean that the logos of the earth is also on that way to become, on the cosmic Buddhic plane, a solar logos at one point? So Sanat Kumara, as the great sacrifice, he's certainly holding his position, but when this act of mercy and great love is finally lived through, then a release will come to him, and it comes under what we call the law of karmic transformation, probably the elevation of great beings. So it is concerned with the release of those like Sanat Kumara and his associates in the council chamber at Shambhala. So maybe the other Kumaras, the Buddhists of activity, whether exoteric or esoteric, from the cosmic desire, which demonstrates upon our cosmic physical plane as spiritual will. Well, imagine being released from cosmic desire. You know, who is the higher correspondence of the Buddha teaching that possibility? So cosmic desire is interesting. The alternation between will, desire, cosmic desire is manifesting a spiritual will on our cosmic physical plane. So above the will is always some aspect of desire. This should be to you an arresting thought. Is it? Okay. It will be obvious, however, that there is little I can say upon the subject. The knowledge involved is not yet mine. So the indication that the knowledge exists is his, but the experienced knowledge is not yet decays. So he can speculate and tell us about the things which he knows are true, but there's a difference between knowing something theoretically, even if we know that it is definitely true, and actually experiencing it. And he's told us that he has not yet been to the cosmic astral plane. So, three aspects of karma and high elevations of some of them. The law of karmic liability, the law of karmic necessity, when some greater being in which we live and move and have our being is compelling us into a certain type of activity that helps that being expiate his own karma. We call it necessity. We can't avoid it. And then the law of karmic transformation into what is such a being as Sanat Kumara being transformed. I think he is on the path of the solar logoi, and since he is an extension in a way of our planetary logos, then, well, these are mysteries. Is our planetary logos also on the way to solar logoic development? So if it's beyond DK, it's certainly beyond us, but we can at least think in that direction. Now, the next section here is about different types of deaths, physical, astral, a second death at the fourth initiation, perhaps. We have to think of the factor of death. I mean, as disciples, we're constantly confronted with the factor of Pluto, and it is operative in the life of disciples, especially, at least consciously so. And we're always, our consciousness is making a transition from one area of confinement to a greater area, but still of confinement, and on and on. And each one of those liberations is a kind of death. So we have to be clear about which ones they are and when we're likely to encounter them. There is, first of all, the constant recurrence of the fact of physical death. This is sort of the warm-up and reminds you of the other kinds of relinquishments which are necessary. It's a basic reminder of the different kinds of relinquishments which lie ahead. Relinquishments. This is familiar to all of us through its extreme frequency, given the millions of years which we have been incarnated, individualized human beings. Could we but realize it, and probably will. I mean, he tells us it's a very familiar experience which we will recognize, but which we certainly fail to recognize in our normal personality consciousness for the most part. So this is familiar to all of us through its extreme frequency. Every 70, 80 years or so, that's what he calls extreme frequency. This recognition would rapidly eliminate the present fear of death. It's just like coming and going to a familiar place. Then there is the second death spoken of in the Bible, which in this present planetary cycle is associated with the death of all astral control over the human being. So that's one type of second death. And Pluto, of course, you know, we cannot get rid of Pluto when it comes to the second initiation. Normal desires die, and they disappear into the smoke of Hades, into the solar plexus center. So maybe second death at the second, or maybe fourth initiation. Let's see how that works. Initiation. In the larger sense, yes, this second death is consummated at the fourth initiation. These two are related, so related. Second initiation and the fourth initiation are intimately related and so often confused by those who are passing through the second initiation. That's the thing. They suffer. It's difficult. And they think it's the great renunciation. But of course, the real issue there has been dealt with as we have examined the life of ISGL quite recently. And we have seen that the fourth initiation is approached in a much, much different way than the second, even though there are some similarities. So in the larger sense, he says, the second death is consummated at the fourth initiation. We can hardly get rid of Pluto there either, because the causal body is destroyed. And in these processes of ultimate destruction, Pluto, I think, would be involved along with Vulcan. When even spiritual aspiration dies, being no more needed, which we say the will has taken its place, although, the will of the initiate is now fixed and immovable, and astral sensitivity is no longer required, yet it's hard, greater beings do have astral bodies, and one can at least imagine aspiration on a very high level. You know, a minute ago we talked about cosmic desire and how it turns out to be will as we experience it, cosmic will as we experience it on the dense physical planes, cosmic physical plane. Okay, So if there is cosmic desire, it's got to be cosmic aspiration analogously considered, but at least the idea here, for a human being, at least, the will takes over the fourth degree, and the monadic contact is very direct, and our sort of astral aspiration is gone. But when we become higher beings who also are equipped with a body of sensitivity that may be a body which gives them cosmic desire, then maybe cosmic aspiration is also possible. That's just going with the law of analogy, but one day we will know, and one day we will find out. There is a curious counterpart to this experience upon a much lower level in the death of all astral emotion. And DK talks about this. This is the dying out of the life of desire, and often happens for the fifth ray type, and is very distressing. So I think when we're dealing with the integration formulas under the fifth ray in esoteric psychology too, he talks about this somewhat, but apparently, it is common with all the rays, but maybe acutely felt with that rather non-emotional ray, the fifth. Anyway, it takes place. It's a curious counterpart to this experience, which takes place for the individual aspirant at the time of the second initiation. And maybe, it's interesting, the second ray soul type simply loses interest, and hence desire for many hitherto desired states and factors. So it is then a complete episode and is consciously registered. I would say, Pluto is active there, and many of our former desires just die away, and we just don't want that. So it seems very confining to want what we once wanted. Now, the Buddha was surrounded by arhats, and he could certainly teach them about the loss of desire, but there had to have been second degree types there too, and they would know something about it. So it's a complete episode then, and consciously registered. Between the second and the third initiations, the disciple has to demonstrate a continuity of non-response to astralism and emotionalism. I think that's a very important statement, and it's a real guide for people who want to know, for those who want to know what has to be accomplished during this interim. Now, it could be even in one life, it doesn't have to be a whole life or two lives, etc. So the dying out, we're told, of desire for the phenomenal world, I think at the second degree is pretty strong. The second death to which I am referring has to do with the death or the disappearance of the causal body at the time of the fourth initiation, and this is in a larger and more general way. And it's prepared, it is being prepared at the second degree. This marks the completion of the building of the Antikarana, up to a certain point, I guess, and the institution of direct, unimpeded continuity of relationship between the monad and the personality. Well, it's really saying a complete Antikarana at the fourth degree. I have always thought that the fifth degree would be required for the retraction of that Mercurian bridge, as Mercury and the Sun are one at the fifth degree. And I thought, that it really requires the sixth degree to retract or the spiritual triad in a way into the monad, which is a completion of the first major phase of the Antikorana, but it's so close that the relationship between the monad and the consciousness of the disciple at the fourth degree, that relationship is so close that maybe he can really say the completion of the building of the Antikorana is there. Now, is that what does he mean by completion? Does he mean all the way to the monad? Okay. Well, if anything, then if it goes all the way to the monad, because we are dealing with the fourth grade of hierarchy, fourth degree, if this completion goes all the way to the monad, then there at least has to be a strengthening of the link during the next degrees. Well, of late I have become aware, of how close a relationship there is once the causal body is destroyed between the elevating consciousness and the monad. It's pretty direct, but obviously it can't be as powerful and complete and full as it will be at the fifth degree and even at the sixth degree, especially when the man really becomes the monad fully, and that is his habitual point of tension rather than a place from which he receives energy. There's a difference between being, sort of a recipient of higher energy and then, on the other hand, being polarized within the place or point of tension from which that energy emanates. Well, we will know, things get fast once we reach the second degree, and maybe, there's a number of us who are ready to go ahead with that kind of speed, which is always based on, I think, intelligent sacrifice, not selfish sacrifice. That kind of thing exists too, as we check out the glamours. So that's quite a paragraph, or a couple of paragraphs here on the different deaths. Or not it may be, but this is additionally. Second or additionally, fourth initiation. So the second initiation is the beginning of the second death, and it is consummated at the fourth degree, and monadic completion of the Antikorana all the way to the monad is found at that point. But there's more. Mercury and the sun have to become one, and the Antikorana still exists, and the Antikorana, in a way, has to be withdrawn when Mercury and the sun become one. It has to, like lifting a ladder up, it has to be lifted up to the higher story and eventually into the monad. But I'm sure there's some kind of Maya Virupik factor operative from the monad. The vestures of the Buddha are taken over by the Christ, and some of us, I suppose, can leave our vestures in the higher sense, those vestures which are triadal, and leave them and use them, or maybe we can regenerate them from the monad, just the way from the triad, the Maya Virupa, as we normally understand it, is generated. All these things lie ahead, and we can be trustful that DK is speaking the truth, not misleading us, giving us a solid footing to develop in the ways which do not waste our time and mislead. And that's something because the bookstores these days are just filled with a lot of nonsense, unfortunately, which is popular because it's easy. So we have to do better than that. Now we go to this, we're still in esoteric healing, so we're discussing illness, dis-ease, a situation which is not easy. So it's the second degree initiates who are suffering here. Maybe by the time we reach the third degree, we're not suffering from the usual type of illnesses. Let's see what it said. It is probably because they are at the stage where the energy of the soul pouring through the physical body meets resistance from that body of a correspondingly intense kind. From the astral body and the changing of desire and into the etheric physical body, soul energy is pouring through. And when there is resistance due to the habit nature of the recipient vehicle, there's going to be friction. That's all. It's not in harmony. The friction set up is so acute that disease is promptly the result. This is not true of disciples who have taken the second initiation. Their problem is otherwise developed. So maybe we weren't talking about the second degree in the very beginning here. We're talking about the normal situation, the physical stage, which involves etheric physical interaction. It does seem that other causes of disease come in after the second degree, I guess because there's maybe more harmony in the astral body and less tendency to send energy through an etheric physical which has not been balanced. I guess a balancing of the etheric physical does occur between the first and second degree. Well, anyway, there are just so many things about the new medicine which have to do with harmony and with the interaction of these energies which are now not even suspected. Okay, moving on. The prerequisites up to the second initiation are upgraded and a higher rate of intelligence is needed. So these are summaries. Hopefully they're relatively correct. All lesser lives, lights must be put out by the light of the central luminary. All little fires must be obliterated by solar fire. I have seen that, in some analogous state that I've often mentioned. Long ago, my aunt was a photography buff, and she carried these big floodlights. They were intense. They were so hot. I was watching television one day, and she turned on the floodlights, and the television image just disappeared. The lesser light disappeared in the greater light. The lesser fire disappears in the solar fire. The solar angel controls the personality life and its forces. So we reach a point where the personality energies are not standing in opposition to the greater light of a solar nature which must take over. This in the new age is the goal of the probationary path and of the applicant or discipleship. Notice even the probationary path is requiring that we have the light of the soul put out the lesser lights. And we might well inquire of ourselves how often and to what extent is the light of the soul putting out the lesser lights. This shows how elevation works and how higher requirements are always being necessitated as we move along. The initiate of earlier times had to know and do less than we have to do, and thus it will be similarly in the future that the initiate of future times will have to know more and do more than we who are seeking to attain the very same goal that he or she is seeking to attain later. So the whole process is constantly being elevated, and although relatively it looks like we're dealing with the same process, the elevation of the whole system makes the requirements higher. Hitherto, this control of the personality life and its forces by solar fire has been the goal of the teaching given and then the path of discipleship. But the higher rate of intelligence, certainly during the fifth ray Aquarian age, not only seventh ray, fifth ray too, but the higher rate of intelligence of the modern applicant warrants a change. And as time goes on, the present requirements for disciples, up to and including the second initiation, will be the requirements for the probationary path. And So one wonders then when X is accepted, let's see, how did A, C, D, SS accepted discipleship? When accepted discipleship will occur? Right now, somewhere before the second initiation, maybe later, it will be a still higher positioning. Anyway, our job is to deal with the requirements of the moment. Certainly, we all want to become accepted disciples and work with greater intimacy in relation to the ashram, and greater usefulness in relation to the ashram. And these opportunities are being offered to us if we take seriously what is now offered and don't treat it, everything as if it's business as usual, because the times are intense and the opportunity extreme. Prerequisites here, we're into the rays and initiations for the second initiation. Well, anyway, we certainly have to become more intelligent. Remember, mental illumination and spiritual intelligence. These are two requirements for the second degree, and maybe they weren't always in the past, but they are now. They are now. And in addition to the heart opening and the quality of love and the desire to serve and all of that, along the 2-4-6 line pulsing through the astral body, all of that is still required, along with this increase of intelligence, so that when we are presented with difficult books like such as the Tibetan has given us, and oh, that's just too much for me, don't believe it. Just plow on and learn and go deeper, increase your knowledge, transmute knowledge into wisdom, make application to Venus, which helps to transmute knowledge into wisdom, and proceed. Okay, here are some prerequisites for those preparing for the second degree. Now I guess we're in rays and initiations, just the way we were just a minute ago. Those preparing for the second initiation have to demonstrate their freedom from the slavery of ideas, or ideals, I might say, from a fanatical reaction to any truth or spiritual leader, and from the control of their aspiration, which through the intensity of its application would sacrifice time, people, and life itself to the call of the initiator, or rather, to be correct, to what they believe to be his call. I've oftentimes read this particular section, and I've seen how many very intense people on the sixth ray have to pass through the process that is here indicated, the achieving of freedom from this intense adherence to ideals, even things that are not necessarily thought through very well. Are they ideas? Maybe in some cases, depending on the higher rays. But fanaticism is a narrowing down, and it doesn't allow inclusiveness and love wisdom to enter, and it sacrifices the wrong thing. So, you know, this sixth ray of undue intensity, it has to be sacrificed. At least the undue intensity part has to be sacrificed. So there's a greater balance as we approach the second initiation. And again, I can see that that balance is helped by Libra, which brings in Venus, and Venus is so important there at that second degree. Oh, it's important at the first degree, second degree, third degree, and maybe Venus turns into the sun at the fourth degree or at the fifth degree, at least esoterically and metaphorically so. This is always amusing to me, this next one, about our hazardous nature and how the hierarchy really sees us, which would probably lead to a very crestfallen situation if we could really see it. Thus he, that is the disciple, goes from strength to strength. Okay. All the time the hierarchy is aiding in his development, unseen and working with the soul, you know, and at the same time protecting the way from him and him from the way, you know. I mean, the angel of the presence does have the flaming sword. And at the same time protecting the way from him until such a time as glamour, let's say in its worst forms, cannot reach him. So, you know, for the most part, after the second degree, this individual security is of his is only reached between the time of taking the second initiation and the third. So, you know, in a way, it lies ahead of a lot of disciples, many of whom cannot be assured that they are yet accepted disciples, which most likely will occur before the second degree. So they're not in a condition of trustworthiness. They're not individually secure. Prior to the second initiation, this period between the second and the third, when the problems in the desert are reached, prior to that, he is still regarded as a potential hazard and as unstable. It's not that he necessarily is a hazard. Maybe he's learned how not to be that. Maybe we were reading ISGL, weren't we? And ISGL, illumination stability, was his second word, wasn't it? And then group love. You know, all those things that we need at the second degree. And sometimes when we know someone is going through a particular degree, we can look at his name or the qualities that DK gave him, and we can say those are characteristic of someone who has to develop them at the particular degree through which he is passing. So prior to that, he is still regarded as a potential hazard and as unstable. So are you ready? Are we ready to admit to ourselves that we are potential hazards and unstable in the eyes of hierarchy, or do we want to mistakenly inflate our status? After that, he may suffer from illusion, because that really isn't conquered until the dispelling power of the intuition gets into the act, probably at the, you know, especially at the third degree. But there is no fear of his permanently turning back, might turn back for a little while, you know, and reaching the left-hand path, because just to turn back doesn't mean you're on the left-hand path. It may lead to the left-hand path. And so perhaps in rare cases, finding his way into the Black Lodge. But in other words, once he's passed the temptations in the desert, which really are great tests, and although they refer to the Christ and very high types of transactions between him and what's called the devil, or the sort of personality and nature of humanity as a whole, and his own personality and nature, if such could be said to exist in the head of the hierarchy, you know, that's something we have to think about. What did the Christ himself have of a personality and nature, since he had been head of the hierarchy already for 500 years? So anyway, prior to that, he is still regarded as a potential hazard and unstable, you know. So how do we look at ourselves, and where do we see our hazardous nature and our instability? Then we might suffer from illusion, you know, the misinterpretation, misapplication of knowledge, the inability to fuse it and blend it and rightly relate it. But there is no fear of his permanently turning back. He may turn back for a little while and reaching the left-hand path, which itself may take a person all the way to the Black Lodge, or maybe those who start on the left-hand path do again turn around and don't find their way into the Black Lodge. And then I love this. I mean, you know, every once in a while I think Master DK is being a little funny, that he has this sense of humor. The major liability of the average initiate. Now, he's not talking about an aspirant or a disciple. He's talking about an initiate, and maybe a probationary initiate, is sloth or lack of speed. Ponder on that. Well, I've been pondering on that a long, long time. And I'm sure it doesn't mean that you run around like the chicken without a head, you know. It's I remember Mary Bailey talking about moving forward like a battleship, an English battleship, with all due deliberate speed. I thought that was, you know, coming from a first-rate soul, as I judge her to be, and she professed that she was that, I think that's a really good way of indicating how one should move. So anyway, here we are. How do we increase our speed, reduce our liability, reduce our hazardous nature, achieve stability, and be of real use to the hierarchy? How do we do that? So this is the end of second initiation compilation and program number 8. And our day here is still 18, June 18. And now this will be the beginning of second initiation compilation program number 9. And I'm not sure what day we'll do this on. Be lucky if I have time, as the hour is growing on apace, to do more today. I'd just like to do these all day if I could, but what is it? Karmic liability prevents that possibility. Okay, thank you, and all the best. Lots of love, and let's absorb what we can and apply it as best we can.